As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. We have a very special guest with us tonight, Connor. Hi, Connor.
Hello.
Connor Baker is a recent nurse graduate from Aurora University in Illinois. He was diagnosed with narcolepsy with cataplexy at 20 years old. Now, as a trained speaker with Project Sleep's Rising Voices of Narcolepsy program, he wants to share his story to help spread awareness and end stigma surrounding narcolepsy. So please, Connor, take it away.
Thanks, Julie. My name's Connor Baker. I'm 26 years old. I live in a small town about an hour outside of Chicago in Illinois. So for my story, starting off, I guess we should start at the beginning, wherever story starts. I was born in a small town in Missouri called Branson, a little tourist attraction town. But really, my story doesn't start until I was about 8 years old. Some of my earliest memories are not the greatest, I would say. The first things I remember are of my dad, my mom getting into physical altercations about who was going to have me for the weekend. Shortly after that, when I was about 8 years old, I ended up losing my mom to a suicide. And then my dad quickly got remarried. And after that, things really started taking a turn for the worse. I was quickly taken out of school by my new stepmom. We ended up couch surfing a lot. I lived pretty much out of a plastic bin. So that way we could just throw a lid on it and leave anytime we needed to. Living environment was pretty unstable. It was an emotionally and mentally abusive environment, and occasionally physically. But, you know, I didn't really do a whole lot as a kid. So me as a person didn't really start to come out until I was a little bit older. What I was allowed to do growing up was pretty much sit in a corner and read a book or clean the house. That's what my free time consisted of. But I was allowed to go to church. So that was kind of where I started developing who I was. I had a lot of friends at church, and I got to see a lot of good stuff at like church and see how other families like operated and other kids acted and stuff that they got to do. And that's kind of where I started realizing, I was like, you know, the way that I'm living isn't super healthy. It's not super great. So I started standing up for myself and defending myself. I was about 15 years old when that started happening. And that didn't go over so great with my stepmom, as you can imagine. So she gave my dad an ultimatum and basically said, you know what, either you get rid of him or I'm leaving. So on my 16th birthday, my dad actually took me to a residential facility and dropped me off. And the last thing he said to me as he was leaving, he said, happy birthday. And I didn't see him again for several years after that. But, you know, as bad as that sounds, it actually ended up being a great thing for me. Like I had mentioned, I had gotten pulled out of school. I was able to get back into school whenever I got put in the residential facility. I spent most of my childhood up to that point as a pretty fluffy kid. So I was able to get in pretty good shape, lost a bunch of weight, lost almost 100 pounds. While I was there, I started playing football for the first time, started playing sports for the first time ever. I started on a team my junior year of high school when I was 17 that ended up being undefeated as conference champs. And I actually ended up getting back in touch with my mom's side of the family because I forgot to mention this, but another thing that my stepmom had done was cut off all contact with my mom's side of the family after her death. So I hadn't spoken to them in almost 8 years. So I was able to get back in touch with them, and they ended up getting custody of me my junior year of high school when I was 17 and moved me down to Louisiana where they lived the summer before I turned 18, and I ended up graduating high school while I was down there as part of National Honor Society. Graduated on time, which was a big thing for me since I had missed so much school. And I ended up finding the thing that ended up becoming my lifelong, what's been my lifelong like hobby type of thing in MMA and boxing and combat sports and stuff like that. So moving down there was a great experience for me. Looking back on stuff, though, if I had to say when my symptoms began, it was probably about the same time I got put in the residential facility. I remember always being tired and thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm more tired than what I should be. And I was seeing a counselor at the time, and I mentioned it to them, and they basically said, and they're like, you know, you've been through a lot. You know, you're trying to catch up on school. You're playing sports. It's normal for teenagers to be tired. No big deal. You're probably just going through a little bit of depression being a teenager. So, you know, I was like, okay, that's no big deal. I can get through that. But looking back on it, I was definitely more tired than what I would say is average. I slept through every single one of my classes. Any free time that I could get, I was probably sleeping. Just to give you an idea, before football games, when everyone else was like, you know, jamming out to music and getting all hyped up for the game, you could pretty much always find me asleep in my pads, sitting in my locker. But fast forward a few years to right after I graduated, I'm 19 years old at this point, and nothing really changed, like feeling tired and sleeping all the time until right after I, like I said, turned 19. I remember I was boxing at the time, and I remember after a workout just feeling super, super tired. Just one of those tireds where like your body doesn't want to move type of thing. You feel like you're weighted down. I couldn't think. I didn't know what was going on. I actually had the coach tell me to go home because he thought that I was, you know, getting sick because of like how I was moving and how I was talking to people. I was extremely tired. But that started happening more on a regular basis. And, you know, I attributed it to pretty much the same thing I attributed being tired in, earlier in high school. I was just like, you know what, I'm burned out. I was, like I said, I just finished graduating high school. I had moved out on my own. So I was working all the time. I was training in boxing and MMA. I was actually training for a state level tournament at the time. So I was just like, you know what, I'm burned out. I'm wearing myself out. No big deal. Let's just keep moving forward. But it ended up getting to a point where I just couldn't plow through it anymore and powerhouse my way through the exhaustion, because it started affecting, you know, just regular everyday things in my life where I was falling asleep while I was talking to people. If I was sitting down, I was pretty much sleeping. And that ended up getting to the point where it was affecting my ability to drive. It got to the point where I was losing chunks of time behind the wheel. I'd wind up in places and not know how I got there. There's so many times that I can remember waking up just because the rumble strips on the side of the road, whenever my tires would hit them, was like they were lecturing me for falling asleep. But probably the most memorable time was one night I was driving home from work. I was working at a fast food restaurant at the time. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And I'm driving home. I had just had a new sound system put in my car. I had the windows down. It was a nice night. It was great. But I remember thinking to myself, I was like, you know, I'm tired, but no big deal. I'm less than 5 minutes from home. I'll get there. And pretty much right after thinking that, I remember seeing a fire hydrant coming towards the front end of my car at about 40, 50 miles an hour. I missed the fire hydrant, thankfully. My car ended up in a field on the side of the road, though. And I remember getting out and thinking to myself, I was like, how did I get here? And I looked down the road and I ended up making a turn and had driven down the road a couple minutes, just lost complete track of time, didn't know how I got there. Like I said, though, I was okay. Car was okay. But a police officer did happen to see it happen. So he, of course, thought that I was under the influence of something, you know, a 19-year-old kid driving at 11 o'clock at night, driving his car into a field. Not a good look. But so he runs me through some sobriety tests. And, you know, I pass, but he's still thinking about taking me in until the friend that I had called was able to show up. They came to help pull my car out, and they helped explain to the police officer, you know, this isn't the first time this has happened. You know, he's fallen asleep all the time. He's fallen asleep behind the wheel multiple times. So thankfully I got off with just a warning. But at that point, I kind of realized, I was like, okay, this is past the point of being normal. It just, this is beyond just being tired. Fast forward a few months, I'm hanging out with a group of my friends, the group of guys that I hung out with, and I'm still friends with all of them to this day. Great group of guys, but we definitely acted like almost like a frat house right after high school, just doing a bunch of crazy stuff, goofing around, messing with each other, just doing crazy stuff. I remember one of those nights when we were hanging out with each other. I'm sitting on the couch and someone does something wild. You know, it was probably pranking one of the other guys. And we were all sitting there laughing. And I remember sitting there and all of a sudden my head drops forward and my face started twitching and my arms wouldn't move. And I just felt weird. Like I couldn't move. I couldn't talk. It was super odd. But, you know, being who I am, I just kind of blew it off. I was like, okay, weird, let's keep going. But shortly after that was just the first of many occurrences, because pretty much any time I hung out with them after that point, that would happen at least once or twice. And it went from just being like when I was laughing to that would happen when I would get surprised or annoyed or upset about anything, really. Anytime I felt any sudden change of like emotion or like an intense emotional change, I could pretty much guarantee that I would, you know, be on the ground because my knees would buckle, my arms would go limp, my head would fall forward. It's just a super weird situation. And, you know, at the time I didn't know what was going on. My friend group that I was with, they didn't know about what was going on, but us being who we were, we, you know, laughed it off, joked about it, figured it was no big deal. But, me personally, you know, between the falling asleep behind the wheel and always being tired, not knowing if I'd fall asleep around them and if this new weird like collapsing thing would happen around them, I went to a pretty dark place. You know, personally, got super depressed, started drinking alcohol a lot, and just was in a bad spot and super unhappy with my life. But during this whole time, about 19 years old, 20 years, I was just about to turn 20, because the spring before I turned 20, I had ended up meeting this girl, and I was talking to her about everything that was going on, and she convinced me to try out going to college. So I was like, you know, it's not a bad idea. Give me something to do with my life. Give me something to do with my time. Get me out of the situation I'm in. So I left Louisiana, moved up to Illinois where she lived, and decided I'd enroll in school. You know, as I'm waiting for school to start up, though, you know, me and her hit it off really well. She knew about all the stuff that was going on, didn't judge me for it, didn't, you know, think any less of me for it. Like, I felt really comfortable around her. So, you know, we hit it off really well. But one night after a date, I think we went out to see the movies or something. She dropped me off at the house. And I remember coming home and just going and sitting down and just saying, I was like, man, I'm exhausted. But I sit down on the couch, and quickly after that, I had this weird sensation, like it's almost like I lost my stomach, like you do whenever you go over a roller coaster too fast. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, that was odd. And then I couldn't move. My arms wouldn't move. My head wouldn't move. I couldn't talk. I was super confused. And then I started hearing feet running around through the house. I was like, okay, that's weird. I'm the only one home. So I try and get up and look around. I can't move. I try and yell. Nothing's coming out. And as I'm trying to do all this, I hear the feet run into the kitchen area, and glass starts breaking and doors start slamming. And I hear this, what sounds like this little girl, like just laughing hysterically. So at this point, I'm getting pretty freaked out. I'm trying to yell. I'm trying to, you know, grab my phone and call for help. But like I said, I can't move. I can't make a sound. And as I'm trying to do all that, the laughing comes and I hear the feet run up behind me, and the laughing stops, and all of a sudden it changes into this weird like whispering that I can't understand. It honestly reminded me of something that you'd see in one of those like horror movies, like an exorcism movie or something. Like just the weird, like deep whispering. It just scared me to death. That felt like it went on for forever until the girl I was dating at the time, she actually shakes me too. And she asked me what's wrong. And I tell her what happened, but then I'm confused because I'm like, well, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing here? You dropped me off and went home. And she said that I had grabbed my, whenever she got home, she had actually gotten a phone call from me, and all that I was mumbling was help, help, help over and over and over again. So at that point, both her and I were like, you know, this something is going on, and maybe I needed to go see a doctor. So I go see a doctor. This is just a couple months before college was about to start for me. I'm 20 years old at this point in time. And I'm telling the doctor what happened, and the doctor just tells me, you know what, you have depression, you're having night terrors, you need to go see a psychiatrist, not me. So he writes me a referral and sends me on my way. But I think about it, I'm like, you know, this isn't depression. I've been struggling with that, you know, my whole life. I know what that feels like, and this definitely isn't it. So I decide to go get a second opinion. I go see a different doctor, and I tell this doctor the same thing, and pretty much the same thing happens. The doctor says, you need to see a psychiatrist, not me. And then I tell him, I was like, no, this isn't depression. Like, this is not what I'm feeling. I was like, you know, this is something different. So then I keep telling him about my symptoms, and I get to the point where I tell him about where I'm collapsing anytime I'm laughing or surprised or get upset about anything. And at that point, their whole demeanor changes. And they're like, you know what, maybe you need to go see a specialist. And they write me a referral to a sleep specialist. So I'm, you know, I'm not sure why they did that. I was like, what does this have to do with sleep? But, you know, I go, and the sleep specialist has a couple tests done, and I get a diagnosis of narcolepsy with cataplexy. And I think to myself, I was like, you know what, this is great. I've got a diagnosis. I know what's going on. I can take some medicine and I'll be all good. My life's going to go back to normal. No more falling asleep. I'm going to have my energy back. I'm not going to collapse. I'm going to be able to like enjoy life again. It's all going to be great. But little did I know, my journey was just starting. Before we go any further though, what is narcolepsy? Narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disorder that impairs the brain's ability to regulate the sleep-wake cycle. It affects about one in every 2,000 people, or 200,000 Americans and 3 million people worldwide. Some major symptoms of narcolepsy include excessive daytime sleepiness, which explains why I was falling asleep all the time. But this is described as periods of extreme sleepiness during the day that feel comparable to how someone without narcolepsy would feel after staying awake for 48 to 72 hours. So that's, like I said, that explains why I was so tired. Well, I was falling asleep during conversations, and anytime I would sit down and just felt so tired all the time. And then there's also cataplexy. Cataplexy, which is described as a striking sudden episode of muscle weakness. It's usually triggered by strong emotions such as laughter, exhilaration, surprise, or anger. The severity can vary from slackening of the jaw to buckling of the knees to falling down. The duration may be for a few seconds or several minutes, and the person remains fully conscious even if unable to speak during the episode. Now, this is what I was experiencing whenever I would laugh with my friends or be surprised by something or just really had any sudden like emotional change. This explained what was going on to me. Then there's also the hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations. These are visual, auditory, or tactile hallucinations upon falling asleep or waking up. And as you can imagine, these are pretty scary. Now, I told you about an auditory one. I've had a couple of visual and tactile ones too. Tactile is where you can actually feel what's going on. Probably still to this day, the scariest one I've ever had was I remember waking up and being strapped to a chair. And I saw this dentist without a face. And I actually was able to feel the dentist reach into my mouth and start pulling on my teeth. So that kind of gives you an idea of what tactile is like. You can actually feel what's going on. But those are often accompanied with sleep paralysis, which is an inability to move for a few seconds or minutes upon falling asleep or waking up. It's often accompanied by the hypnagogic or hypnopompic hallucinations. And it's important to know that people without narcolepsy can experience these hallucinations and sleep paralysis as well. In fact, about 1/3 of all people experience these at some point in their life, usually during periods of high stress or poor sleep. For people with narcolepsy, though, these are much more frequent and consistent over time. And this explains why I wasn't able to move during those episodes, those hallucinations. Another common symptom is disrupted nighttime sleep. Unlike public perceptions, people with narcolepsy don't just sleep all the time. Timingness of sleepiness is off. With narcolepsy, someone may fight sleepiness during the day, but struggle to sleep at night. There's also two types of narcolepsy, narcolepsy with cataplexy and narcolepsy without cataplexy. Narcolepsy with cataplexy is defined as a lack of hypocretin by recent research. It's a key neurotransmitter that helps sustain alertness and regulate the sleep-wake cycle. Less is known about narcolepsy without cataplexy. And what I was diagnosed with was with the narcolepsy with cataplexy. How do you get diagnosed, though? So diagnosis typically includes a 24-hour sleep study that includes a nighttime portion, polysomnograph, and a daytime portion, multiple sleep latency test, to record a person's brainwaves. Diagnosis is mainly based on how quickly and frequently one goes into rapid eye movement or REM sleep, which is the dream sleep stage during these tests. That picture is my glamour shot of the night that I went in for my 24-hour sleep study. Treatment varies per person. There is currently no cure for narcolepsy. Treatment for symptom management varies widely, but they can include wake-promoting, histamine-directed, or stimulant medications to increase alertness during the day, nighttime medications to increase wakefulness and reduce cataplexy, antidepressant medications to decrease occurrence of cataplexy, and scheduled daytime naps. There's also coping strategies such as social support through meetup groups and social media, and of course, improvement in general health through good sleep hygiene, diet, and fitness health as well. For me, the treatment has been quite a journey. It took me 6 years. It wasn't until just recently this year that I found a combination of medications that work. And it took me seeing three different doctors to finally get to that point. So it definitely wasn't what I thought it would be in a quick fix, go to the doc and it'd all be good. It's definitely a journey in and of itself. But between that and having the social support groups with people with narcolepsy, thankfully I've come to a point now where I feel like I've got a good handle on things. But back to the story. Like I mentioned, I was just about to start college whenever I got this diagnosis. When I started school up, I had the dream that I was going to go and become a doctor and, hopefully a surgeon one day. And, whenever I got that diagnosis, like I said, I thought it was going to be a quick fix. I was super excited, super hopeful. But I started falling asleep in my classes again. And of course, that doesn't go over so well with college professors most of the time. So I had a few professors, say, how do you plan on getting into the medical field if you can't stay awake long enough to get through your basic classes? I also had the doctor tell me, whenever I told them what I was planning on doing, that I wanted to be a doctor and possibly surgeon. The doctor told me, they're like, that's going to be nearly impossible. They told me that maybe I should think about doing something else, and that my life, how it was now with it being tired and falling asleep all the time and, just stuff like that. They said, that's just going to be your life and I have to get used to it. But me being who I was for a while, I said, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to do what I want to do. And hit home with me that maybe they were right, until one day during a lab, I think I was dissecting a frog, but I had an episode of cataplexy where it kicked in and my arms dropped. And I remember actually cutting myself with a scalpel. And I thought to myself at that moment, I was like, they're right. I can't do this. I'm not capable of it. So between the doubts from other people and now me doubting myself, I gave up on what I thought I was going to be able to do. Ended up leaving school. I went and tried my hand at a few different things. I left school when I was 22, tried my hand at the oil field, didn't like that a whole lot. I tried working in the trades, I actually ended up even opening my own business in auto body repair. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know, I like this, but it's not what I want to do with my life. So I started thinking, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to school. And I figured nursing was something that I could do where I could actually help people the way that I wanted to, but not have to worry about having the, you know, my narcolepsy kick in and me hurt somebody. So I went back to school and was super excited about that. But of course, I did have misgivings. I was nervous about the same things happening again. And, you know, they did. I had professors, you know, question my ability to graduate. I can't remember how many times I heard maybe you should drop out of nursing school and just come back whenever you got everything figured out. I had clinical instructors that I had one that actually tried to get me to fail out of nursing school because I dozed off during a post conference when we were just sitting down talking about our day. I had students, you know, question my ability to do it, and you know it wasn't a super encouraging thing for a 24-year-old. I started school back up. But like I said, I thought to myself, I was like, you know what, I'm gonna power through this and it'll all be fine. So I was able to do that, thankfully, with the help of some friends. And I made some good friends during nursing school that made sure that, like, during my whenever I would fall asleep, that they would, you know, help me out with my notes so I didn't fall behind. The clinical instructor that actually tried to get me to funk out of nursing school, little did she know that I was actually good friends with the chair of the nursing program at the time. And the chair of the nursing program actually said to her, she was like, "You're aware that he has this diagnosis, correct?" And the clinical instructor said, "Yeah, I know about it." And she was like, "Then why are you coming to me to mention something that you already know about?" And kind of just blew the whole situation off. So I had a really good support system through the chair of the nursing program. Then I also have always had my fiance. So remember that girl that I told you about that convinced me to go to school in the first place? Well, me and her had stayed together through all of this. And we are now engaged and going to be officially getting married this year. She's always had my back through everything. She's always supported me. Always believed in me, even whenever I didn't believe in myself. So between the friends that I had made along the way, the help from the couple faculty members at school, and of course her, I was able to actually graduate this past December my nursing degree. I've graduated with a BSN, Bachelor's of Science in Nursing, and a minor in Physiology. And it's something I'm really proud about because I believe in 2011, it was actually rated by the Guinness Book of World Records, the hardest bachelor degree to get. So it was a huge accomplishment for me. That kind of leads me to my life now. You know, I live with my family, who includes my two dogs. I've got a Mastiff whose name is Kratos. He's 135 pounds. And then our little Bella, she's our fat mama. She's a 10-year-old little or 11-year-old little pit mix. You know, I'm also able to do things that I like and love and enjoy. We like going places, traveling, hiking, stuff like that. But, you know, what does the future hold for me? Well, like I had mentioned in the past and like previously, like in the past, I loved combat sports. I love boxing. So I'm going to try and get back into that. I actually recently just started up again. I plan on hopefully competing in the state level tournament that I had never gotten to compete in that I had trained for. And it's called Golden Gloves. So hopefully in the next couple of years, I'm able to do that. And then I also want to really get involved in the advocacy for narcolepsy and other rare diseases. And, you know, just people who have health conditions and situations that people just don't necessarily understand. I want to be able to show that, you know, your diagnosis doesn't necessarily define you, doesn't have to keep you in a box. Doesn't have to hold you back. You can still accomplish whatever it is that you want to do with your life. One way I can do that, though, is through raising awareness for narcolepsy, because of the low awareness, even among healthcare professionals, physicians, and misperceptions. There's an average of 8 to 15 years between narcolepsy symptom onset and diagnosis. It's estimated that a majority of people with narcolepsy are currently undiagnosed or misdiagnosed, with common misdiagnoses including epilepsy, depression, and schizophrenia. So with that being said, I'm sharing my story today as part of the Rising Voice of Narcolepsy program, for the nonprofit organization Project Sleep, which empowers patient advocates to share their stories and improve public understanding of narcolepsy. So thank you guys for letting me share my story.
Hey, Connor.
Thank you.
Good job. Thank you so much for sharing.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
We have a lot of questions about your education. And so have you thought about doing anything in sleep medicine as a nurse practitioner or anything like that?
Yeah, long-term wise, that would be a huge goal for me. I'd love to get involved in like the research side of things. You and I have talked about some stuff that I'm curious about in the past, and there's definitely a lot involved in the sleep medicine and neurology and stuff like that. A lot of unknowns, a lot of stuff that we know a little bit about, but not enough. And I'd love to be part of learning more about all of that stuff. So yeah, I'd love to be part of that.
So more of the research side, you think?
Yeah, I think that's where I'd long-term like to go. Initially though, I think it's important for me to get like that bedside type of thing too. You can learn a lot about a lot of different stuff just taking care of an individual. First bedside, then maybe long-term when I'm like in my 50s, get into the research side of things.
Someone wanted to know if you think your narcolepsy will affect your performance as a nurse.
I don't think so. I think that a lot comes in with the knowing yourself and knowing how to take care of your symptoms as they come up type of thing, making sure you have the right safety stuff set up, whether it's like through talking through HR, timing your medication. There's a whole bunch of different factors that can play into that, but that's why self-care is so important, is so that you don't have to worry about stuff like that. It's something that, just me being who I am, I'm always going to be concerned about, am I taking good enough care of somebody? But I don't think that the narcolepsy is going to be something that makes me worried about, is it going to affect my care of a person?
I think it also that, sometimes we think in this framework of the negatives, but also there's so many positives to your personal experience as a caregiver and what that'll make you better at your job.
Yeah. Definitely. It's definitely lets me empathize with a lot more people and take a lot more things seriously that often get overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Question about your boxing. So cool that you got your fiance into Muay Thai. Is that how you say it?
Yep.
That is so cool. So you said that you were into that before and now you're kind of coming back into it. So I was curious, why did you kind of stop?
So when my symptoms started up, just how tired I was all the time, I think I mentioned like I felt embarrassed about going out because I didn't know if I was going to fall asleep like after the training sessions or anything. I didn't want to be like caught sleeping at the gym. But between that and just how tired I was, because more doing that level, that type of training would leave me being like exhausted for like a day or two just after one session. Like I felt like everything was off for like a couple days just for working out once. So I kind of let myself give up on it. Is the best way of saying it. Like I said, that's one of those things where now that I know how to take better care of myself and I've seen like the doctors and got my treatment and everything right, I'm able to actually do that now. I still have to, I still have to take care of myself, and involves a nap afterwards. But, I feel good about doing it again. And I feel like I can do it again.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very true from my experience as well. I really took about 2 years off myself from exercise for the most part. and came back to it. So I think one of the most powerful things you said, Connor, was that it took you three different doctors over 6 years to really feel like you found a better treatment regimen. That's just such a powerful point and really important for people to understand. This has been a journey, you know? All right, we got more questions. Oh, well, I'm going to have one fun one and then I'm going to read some other ones, but I am curious about your beard. Matt has said that you have a top three narcolepsy beard. And so, but a lot of your pictures, you don't have a beard. And when did that happen?
It actually just randomly happened when quarantine started. Prior to that, it was peach fuzz, like blonde and patchy and wasn't worth growing. And then my fiance convinced me to give it a shot, and here we are now.
Well, it's apparently top three in the narcolepsy community, so pretty impressive.
Matt can speak. He probably has number one.
If he's the judge and he's number one, that's awfully suspicious. Okay, so Brooke wants to know, she has one thing she struggles with is how to respond when people call her out on sleeping or make rude comments. How did you respond when people would call you out on falling asleep even after you had a diagnosis?
So initially how I responded, still how I respond is if I know them well enough, I try and like tell them, like, you know what, I can't help it. I have narcolepsy. And just because for me, that's an opportunity to educate type of thing, help spread awareness for it. More often than not, that actually invokes like a conversation, and like I said, gives you a chance to like tell them more about narcolepsy. Yeah, it's sharing your personal business, so it's like it's up to the person to decide if they want to do that or not. But it's something that I, like, me personally has felt like from that. That's how I respond, is I tell people like, hey, I have narcolepsy. You know, it's not something that I can really help a whole lot. But it's definitely something that embarrassed me a lot to start off with. I didn't really know how to respond either initially when people would make comments. I just tried to laugh it off or, you know, just laugh with them type of thing. And I figured out that wasn't, for me personally, that wasn't like a super healthy route for me to go, because it just reinforced that whole thing in my mind of like, something's wrong with me. And I don't want to think like that about myself. So, you know, it's something that I can't help. I can't control. I have narcolepsy, and that's just how I handle it. That's a hard question.
Probably depends on the situation always, but it's always nice to hear other people, how they handle it. So we have a question about your self-care. Do you have any self-care tips that you think could help other people?
Probably the thing that has helped me the most is kind of figuring out what my body schedule is, I guess, is the best way of saying it. So like me personally, I know that I get super tired at certain points of the day. And like, if I don't take my medicine at a certain time, or is things as little as small as like, if the temperature in the house is too warm, like it's really like learning about yourself and like what causes the spikes in your symptoms. So for me personally, like, I know I get really tired, but sometime between like 10 and noon, and again between like 4 and 6. So if I have the opportunity, I try and set a couple alarms, because it normally takes a couple to wake me back up. But I'll try and take a nap for about 20, 30 minutes, like at the beginning of those time windows. So that way I'm trying to control at least when my sleepiness is. And, timing of the taking my meds in the morning is also super important, because that just helps give me the little jump start I need, so that like I don't spend the day in that like constant like brain fog and haze of being like tired all the time.
Yeah, I think that's almost sounds like self-discovery is the first step before you can even do self-care, you know?
Yeah, that's why it was such a journey for me, because I've kept saying in the thing, like, I'm one of those people that just puts my head down and plows through. So I'm not the type of person that takes care of themselves. That just was not me at all. honestly, learning how to do that has been one of the best things that's ever happened for me and to me.
I think that it may be more difficult for men to share their story compared to women. You are certainly one of our, you know, we have only fewer men for sure that participate in this program. So what do you think about that?
I think it depends on the guy. I mean, me personally, yeah, I'm not the type of person that typically comes out and shares a whole lot. But with developing narcolepsy and stuff like that, I've found the benefit in doing it, because holding it in and trying to hide it and trying to laugh it off and blow it off, it was too much for me to handle. I think, like, my personal opinion, I think that it happens that a lot of guys try and do that. We try and hide behind this. We try and, you know, just not necessarily hide behind, but we try and, you know, put our head down and keep going forward and ignore that stuff is going on. And I think that that's kind of why a lot of guys don't share, I guess. Not necessarily bad, you know, like I said, it just depends on the person. For me, I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep holding it in all the time. So I think it depends on the guy, and it's just a personal choice. Like if coming out and sharing helps them, that's a great thing. You know, some guys can just, you know, do it in their work, find some type of other extracurricular activity to, like, you know, get involved in to help blow off like stress of life and stuff like that. But I know for me personally, it's definitely hard to share.
So we have a question about, and I was going to ask you how you found out about Rising Voices and how you got involved. And then someone else wanted to ask you about what that process was like, and was it difficult? And, you know, please be honest and share your experience with the program. But of course, you know, it's kind of awkward because, but, you know.
So the process of actually getting involved was honestly really straightforward, and like I felt it was straightforward and pretty easy to do.
How did
the process work? So I actually found out because my fiance, she's one of those points where she just wasn't giving up on me type of thing. And you know, I've gone through a bunch of like really rough dark patches with this and trying to figure everything out. And you know, she really pushed towards the whole, you know, let's find other people that, like, you know, have it and, you know, are living with it. And through her looking and pushing me to look, that's, I can't remember which one of us found Project Sleep, but I know that she was the one who pushed me to find it, to get involved in it. But once I did get involved in it, the process of doing everything was pretty straightforward and easy. The stuff that you guys taught us how to do, I felt was like super helpful. I still say all the time in my presentations, just talking in general. But I mean, the stuff that you taught us about how to share, and I mean, it was really, really educational, really helpful. And I mean, even if you don't decide to share it like publicly type of thing, I think it's a great way to get to know other people that have narcolepsy, and just it helps you get involved in a community of people that that, like, for me, I could relate to. So easy process, great time. I simplified version.
Yeah. It's such an honor to work with people like Connor, and you know, his stories are so vivid and really powerful for a presentation. And very emotional. So, you know, I think it's kind of been an emotional process even to be part of, you know, working through your story with you, and very rewarding. Connor, is there anything else you can think of that you wanted to share tonight?
Nope. Thank you guys for listening. Appreciate it. And thank you for letting me share.
Yes, of course. And thank you for taking the spoons and the energy. We know it takes a lot to do something like this. So. And thanks everyone for tuning in. Bye everybody.
Thank you.
Bye Connor.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.